Avos per Gimel Mishnah Yud Zayin 3:17. Some Mishnayos is 3:13. We get to the great Rebbe Akiva. So, without elaborating on his life story right now so much, what's essential to know at the moment is that Rebbe Akiva is essentially the nexus, the source of the coming together of the Torah Shebaal Peh traditions that have come down to us. Meaning, for example, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Estam Mishnah's Rebbe Meir, that the Mishnayos were generally, unless they are otherwise noted, they're authored by Rebbe Meir, and Stam Tosefta Rebbe Nechemia, and Stam Sifra Rebbe Yehuda, and Stam Sifrei Rebbe Shimon. So all these, like the primary Tanaic works, the early written works of Torah Shebaal Peh, were written by different people, but the Gemara says, V'chulam al piv shel Rebbe Akiva. They all really are coming from their teacher, Rebbe Akiva. So Rebbe Akiva is, I guess, the most important of the later Tanaim, as a source of Torah Shebaal Peh. And here in our Mishnah here, we're going to have five different areas that are siyagim. Siyag is like a protective fence. Like there's a pasuk in Shir Shirim referring to a suga of Shoshanim, like a wall, a hedge of roses. So a siyag is a protective fence. And fence, of course, keep the bad guys out, keep the good guys in. So that's what this fence are here doing. And there are five different topics here. Let me read the whole Mishnah. You'll see that although it's talking about five different kinds of siyagim, five times of protective fences, the syntax, the way which it's expressed, the Mishnah is inconsistent. And that, of course, raises opportunities for certain elaboration, interpretation. The Mishnah says, Rebbe Akiva Omer, Schok v'kalus rosh, laughter and levity, margilin le'erva, they accustom a person to sexual impropriety. Masores siag l'Torah, the tradition of the oral tradition is a fence for the Torah. I'll have to explain as we get there. Maestris siag l'Osher, tithing is a siag, a protective fence for wealth. Nedarim siag l'Precious, vows are a protective fence for Precious, separation. Again, I have to explain at length. And finally, siag l'Chochma shtika, the protective fence for wisdom is silence. Again, so you'll just note that the last of the five, the syntax is different. It doesn't say shtika is a siag l'chokhmah, rather it says that siag l'chokhmah shtika, which is interesting. And the first of the five, which we'll talk about right now, schokhm kalas rosh, the word siag isn't mentioned at all. So let's just go through these things one at a time, all five of them. The first is schokh v'kalas rosh, laughter and goofing around, levity, kalas rosh. Margilin es ha'erva, they make a person accustomed to impropriety, so the immorality. So the idea here is that the Maganavos, Machzor's Vitri, both say we're talking about schokin kalas rosh, goofing around in the presence of a woman who's forbidden, an erva. So in that scenario, essentially what happens is that a person has natural social inhibitions, says Tiferes Yisrael, and those are worn down, they become loosened through goofing around. So what happens is, obviously, things don't get out of control with every doctor and a secretary, but every time it did get out of hand, it started out with, you know, schokin kalas rosh, you know, goofing around, joking, leads to flirting, leads to worse things. The idea is that it's a slippery slope, and therefore one has to be careful, especially with, you know, with this protective fence. Now, the reason why it doesn't say something like, you know, seriousness, austerity is a siyag for erva, is because twofold. First of all, to be sort of serious and austere is not a mile to itself. It's not an advantage. It's not the right thing to do. A person should be doesn't have to be austere. And grumpy or miserable or, you know, whatever. And on the other hand, it's not that it's sort of extra credit to voluntary to avoid schokin kalas rosh. If the Mishnah would have said either of those two things, if it would have said, you know, being serious is a siyag forever, that's a virtue to be austere and serious. That's not quite the case. I mean, if it would have said serious, maybe not a translation, but austere and kind of grumpy and, you know, severe. On the other hand, if it would have said, you know, not being, avoiding kalas rosh is a siyag, then you would have thought, okay, so that's just sort of extra credits. But no, it's a virtue to itself to avoid being a goofball. A person should be serious. Like I said that badly. Serious is good, but austere and, you know, grumbly is not. Okay? So that's why the Mishnah says what it says. Now, the next of the Mishnayas, next of the case of the Mishnah here, I should say, is the Masores is a siyag l'Torah. So now, Masores means a tradition. So the way that Bartanur learns it, we're talking about the tradition of how to write the spell the words in a Sefer Torah. Sometimes they're male, sometimes they're chaser, you know, extra or missing letters. And that the precise spelling is a siyag l'Torah. Make sure the Torah shebichsav is protected. There are those who learn it's not just the male and the chaser, it's just the extra missing letters, but other aspects of the writing of a Torah scroll as well, things like, you know, the psuchos and stumos, the breaks, and there's sometimes there are like special like markings above certain words and the like. Whatever the case is, what this is saying is that the precise writing and spelling of the words in the Torah are essential to ensure that the mitzvahs are carried out properly, because certain halachas are embedded in those extra missing letters. We're not even talking about like drushes necessarily, like not a yitur, an extra letter in that sense, but sometimes, like the bartender brings a well-known example from Sukkah, that when you try to figure out how many walls a Sukkah has to have, it's learned out from the it's written three ways in the Torah, and there's malays, there's chasers, and you kind of add things up. I don't want to get into the details, but the point is the missing and extra vavs, they come to tell you how many walls. So the point is, if you would not spell it precisely, have the exact spelling, you wouldn't be able to know this halacha. That's the idea. Now, the question is sort of, what's the hava? I mean, like, what did he have in mind here? What Torah scroll is a Torah scroll? So it's possible that perhaps people, you know, before everyone has a chumash printed on a printing press in the shul, everyone wrote their own Sefer Torah. That was a mitzvah from the Torah, the last mitzvah in the Torah, to write your own Sefer scroll. And perhaps people were sloppy, and if they were sloppy, they would have, besides having puzzle Sefer Torah, they'd also have like the wrong dinam. They might think, oh, what's the big deal if I spell it Malay or Chaser? It's the same exact word. No, it's not the same word. Another possibility is, we're talking about there's the alternative of having translations, right? Just as today, many people, you know, go to shul, and when there's a laning happening, they don't read the psukim. They're reading like the art scroll translation or the like. So in the time of Chazal, in Eretz Yisrael, people spoke Aramaic as a first language. And the Targumim, the translations of the Aramaic, were present that people learned in the Targum. And outside of Eretz Yisrael, people primarily spoke Greek, and therefore the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Chumash, was used widely. And many people couldn't read the original Hebrew. They read only in the translation. So if that's the case, of course, the point of our mission here would be that, you know, something is necessarily lost in translation, even though you can have a perfect translation, hypothetically, let's say you could, and you see there's halachas, like Kriya Shema you could say in translation, is if it's a good translation. So Chazal accept there could be a good translation, but the problem is you can never build in a Malay or Chaser, those missing extra letters, if it's not the Hebrew spelling of the word and so on. So that precise spelling in the original is what you need to, is a protect to make sure that these halachas are kept. Next we have Maestris. Oh, so I should have actually said, sorry, there's other Pshatim I should say. Oh, we'll stay. But one more, Midrash Shmuel. The Midrash Shmuel says the Masoros here means not the writing of the letters in the Sefer Torah like the Bartanur and others, but rather it means the oral tradition in general. And his point is that the fact that there's an oral tradition as opposed to it all being written down is a siyag l'Torah. It enforces and ensures that people keep the Torah tradition alive. Because when it's got to be oral and people have to memorize it, so they make an effort to memorize it and it becomes part of them. It's in their heads. If you know it's written down, so then you feel sort of less obliged to memorize it because you figure, if I need to know it, it's written, it's already written down. Even if I never learn it, doesn't matter. I have it whenever I need it. And therefore, a person doesn't learn in the first place. So therefore, he, Midrash Shmuel learned, the point is that the fact that the Torah is oral instead of written down counterintuitively ensures that it's not forgotten. People make an effort to remember it. Okay. Next, you have Maestris or Siyag LaOsher. Tithing is a protective fence for wealth. So there is the pasuk in Devarim that says Aser ta'aseres kol tvuas zarecha. You shall certainly tithe all your produce. So that's the Maestr that one gives, the tithing one gives of his produce. And on that, the Gemara in Taina says, Darshan said it's a drush really, Aser bishvil shetit aser. You should tithe so that you will become wealthy. In other words, Chazal say that tithing actually, ironically, doesn't people think it makes them poor because it gives them money away. To the contrary, it actually protects your wealth. That's a siyag, and actually it makes you wealthier. And amazingly, the Gemara there says a person can even test Hashem in this regard. He can actually test Hashem in giving his maestros, and he'll discover happily that he doesn't lose, but actually gains from it. Now, there is a machlokas in the Mefarshim if you're allowed to test Hashem with maestro ksafim, with tzedakah of cash, not just tithing the produce. The tithing, the giving of the cash is not a doraisa, but pashas. But either yes or no, the point is our Mishnah is saying, Rabbi Akiva is saying, don't think giving your produce or your money away is going to make you poor. The contrary, is going to keep your money in your pocket. And actually, you'll actually, according to Gemara and Tanis, actually become richer as it happens. Okay, next you have that nedarim are a siyag leprishus. So a neder is a vow that one takes, and precious means separation. So the gist of this mission is as follows. Everyone knows, you know, you're on diet, and you say, listen, no more ice cream for me. And then everyone else eating ice cream, or you pass their ice cream shop, and you kind of just can't resist, and you end up eating ice cream, and after you say, I can't believe I ate it, I'm supposed to be on diet, oops. So that's a common phenomenon, but it's probably never happened to you that you were fleishik, and then everyone else eating ice cream, you're like, oh, everyone else eating, I'm eating ice cream too. That doesn't happen because you know there's a red line you can't cross. It's usher, you can't have it. So the neder we're talking about here is a neder against which is permitted to you. But if your experience is showing, you just can't resist. And the Rabbeinu Yonah says this is really sort of a last resort. If you've tried but you just keep on falling into the same trap of eating that ice cream despite your diet and your doctor telling you have to not eat it, or you know, you keep on drinking too much and getting out of hand, I need to put a bit of getter against the wine you're drinking and the like. So you can use, kind of as a last resort, but that's what it's there for, a neder. A neder, of course, you say, ice cream is forbidden to me, or wine is forbidden to me, and that will be a tool which makes it now to help you fight your yetzer, to get you accustomed to not eating ice cream, or not drinking the wine, and the like. So that's this next step. Finally, you have siyag l'chochma shtika. The fence for wisdom is silence. Now, because it's written sort of out of order here, many learn that the point is that being silent doesn't make you smarter and doesn't necessarily even keep your wisdom in. The point is that at a bare minimum, by remaining silent, you have an aura, you appear to be a chacham. And that's actually, you know, of course, that's a pasuk. I actually said it earlier on, because we've had twice already in Avos, in the first parak, we had in the Mishnah 15, the first parak, that was Shammai who said, Emor ma'at v'aseh harbe, say little and do much. So already that's the miles of not talking too much. And then at the end of the parak we had Rav Shimon Gamliel who said, lo matzasi tov leguf el ashtika, nothing better for the body than silence. So we've talked about the virtue of silence. Here we're talking about how silence sort of makes you look wise, and that's based on a pasuk in Mishlei, which says, gam evil macharish chacham yechashev, even a fool, if he remains silent, he is considered wise. So the idea is that if you keep quiet, at least at a minimum, you'll appear wise. In fact, the Gemara Pesachim Tzadites says, "Yafeshtika lechachamim kol v'chomer letipshim." Silence is good for the wise, and of course, all the more so for the foolish. Now, that's one level. There are others who learn that, in fact, look, the Bartanur, for example, says over here. Obviously, the silence we're talking about is not refraining from talking Torah. Because you have a mitzvah, v'higisa b'yom v'layla, you're all supposed to be talking in Torah, so it's not about that kind of silence. And obviously not talking about being refraining from talking about lashon hara and the like, because that's usher from the Torah. So we're talking about dvarim shebrishus. We're talking about things that are permitted to talk about, but not necessary. So talking about the sports, the weather, politics, the like. So there, a person's better off being quiet. That's his approach over here. Again, so he doesn't look like a fool. There are others who learn that there is actually a positive benefits to keeping silent, which is, you know, for example, you're in a shir and you have a kasha. If you just interrupt, then you're not going to hear what the Rav has to say in full. And like, everyone's going to hear you, but you're not going to hear what needs to be said, so you're going to maybe miss out. Better be quiet and first seek to understand before you try to be understood. And similarly, you know, if someone asks you a question, so don't just blurt out the answer. Think about it first. Again, that will not just make you look smarter, but you actually will be smarter because you'll consider things and you'll say the right thing. You have more chance of being a chacham and speaking with wisdom if you take the time to be silent at first to think things through.